It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young.
Ah, what a time of year, man. I'm glad when fall finally gets here. We had 90-degree temperatures last week, and you know we're wearing shorts, and this week it's in the 50s, so fall has officially arrived. I think that hurricane that came through actually brought winter with it. So that was nice. How are you guys liking
it? I wish. It's still 85 and close to 90 here in Mississippi.
What?
And I don't think there was a whole lot that was nice about that hurricane, Brian.
Let me be clear. I wasn't saying the hurricane was nice. I was just saying that it brought some cool. As soon as it moved through, all of the temperatures dropped here considerably. So
went to the fair last night and I was sweating the entire time.
Yeah, we wanted to go to the fair yesterday too, here in Dallas, Brad, and it rained pretty much all day long. It was a pretty nasty day in Dallas. The temperatures were good, but it rained just awful.
Let's jump into things. So starting off on a non-Apple note, I finally got my soundbar fixed. Jim, when are you going to do that, man? How long's your warranty? Don't you have to get that fixed at some point?
Yeah, I need to get it fixed before Thanksgiving, and I'm only home like on Fridays now, and even then I was gone for like a couple of them because of travel and then ACL and all that. So yeah, eventually the problem now is for me to call, I've got to hook the thing back up. And so I've got to like plug it all back up before I call them because it works, but it takes so long to get it to start up and then try to get it set to the right source and everything that I just unplugged it and just plugged the Apple TV directly into the TV now. And so if I call them to troubleshoot it, they're going to want to troubleshoot it first. And so I've got to plug the thing back in, and I just haven't called them yet.
So what's the issue you're having with yours? I can't remember. It's been so long since we talked about it.
Mine, I'm pretty sure it's actually just the software on it is shot. Like it takes 5 minutes to start up, and then to try to get it to switch to the right source to get the TV sound through it and everything, and to get everything flowing through it, it doesn't want to switch, and then you got to like get lucky and get it to switch to the right source. So I'm pretty sure mine, the software on it's just hosed.
Can you do firmware updates on it?
No, I can't get to, that's the problem. I cannot get to that menu anymore. I can't get to the home screen for the soundbar, like where you would do the updates and everything. I cannot get to that screen at all.
The worst part about having that soundbar is that if you have to pack it up and ship it off, I don't know how your warranty is with Best Buy. I just assumed you could bring it into Best Buy and drop it off or something. But is that not the case?
Yeah, mine's through Magnolia, like their little offshoot, high-end, you know, audio people, whatever. And so I was told that more than likely that they would send somebody out, and if there was something wrong with it, they'd take it back with them. So like they'd send out a Geek Squad person or something, I don't know.
Which would require you to have to stay home to be able to make that happen.
Right, and I'm never home, or, you know, if I'm home, it's on Saturday and Sunday, so.
Wow, I would have loved to have had that deal. I had to pack my subwoofer had never sounded right from the time I got it. There was something off about it, like there was a crackle or a slight rattle or something that just wasn't, I couldn't really put my finger on it, but it wasn't sounding right. And I knew that year was coming up, so I had to go find a box that could handle it. And shipping a subwoofer is not an easy thing. Because you don't want to, you know, they're very specific. You damage this, that's on you, and, you know, we're not going to fix it and all this other stuff. So I went out and bought some cheap pool noodles. Since it was the end of summer and it was the fall, they were like $2 a piece. And I was carving up pool noodles and putting them in the box. And actually, my wife had a good idea of taking, we have a number of old Amazon boxes that we keep in the garage just for shipping things. And because I do a lot of shipping in and out, I don't keep a ton of them, but I have enough of them. We crushed those down and used those as shipping, as packing material inside the box. Because they would keep the thing from moving, but wouldn't put pressure on it. And it was pretty clever. I mean, it looked janky as all get out. It was terrible. It was like I sent a dumpster filled with empty boxes with a subwoofer in the middle. But it got the job done. So I was very pleased. And when United Radio sent it back to me, they had just put it in. They put it in a normal size box, but they used packing peanuts, which I absolutely loathe. And no styrofoam. I was very disappointed in how they sent it back. I did a much better job sending it to them than they did to me.
So I have a life hack for packing peanuts. If you've got a shop vac and you realize that there's packing peanuts in something, like as soon as you open it, go take it to the shop vac, suck all those peanuts in there. You end up with none on the floor and you can get your package right away.
That is a good idea. Well,
none of them stuck to the back of your arm or something hanging on by, you know, static electricity.
What's that thing weigh, Brian? Like 40 pounds?
It's not easy. Yeah, it's about 40 pounds. It's a heavy thing. And Thank goodness they put the return label to FedEx with it. So, you know, I take this box and it's huge over to the FedEx place minutes before they close. And can I put fragile on this? It's like, they're not going to pay any attention to it. So, and everything I saw online was like, make it so that it could withstand being dropped from 6 feet. I'm like, you got it. Engineer mode activated. Let's do this. Like one of those things where you put an egg inside of those, like a thing when you're a kid to design the little science project so an egg could survive falling off a building. That's what I was trying to do. So, but now I got it back. It took them a couple of weeks. They replaced the entire innards of the thing. The loudspeaker has changed. So it sounds great now. I feel like I have a bona fide little Dolby Atmos movie theater in my basement. It's great. Love it.
So do you think they fixed it or they sent you back a different speaker?
No, they absolutely fixed the one that I had. The serial number still matches. They told me they were going to do it. The invoice in there said they replaced it in there. So it was definitely a fix. But I used the manufacturer's warranty. I didn't buy the additional warranty because I think you did an open box. So that makes sense. If I had done an open box, I would have done exactly what you did. But I've always had good luck with Sony though, so I was wagering that it was going to be okay, and it was, and man, it sounded nice. I missed it there for a while. My nieces came to visit; they hadn't seen Ant-Man and the Wasp, so we watched it. And at first, I fired it up through the soundbar, and there's no bass, and it sounded really, really weird. So I had to turn off the soundbar and play it through one of the native apps on the TV, so at least there would be a little bit of bass in there, because otherwise, it sounded really weird with no subwoofer and Dolby Surround or Dolby Atmos rather. So very, very strange. So I'll set up a reminder to remind you to get that fixed in about another 2 weeks.
Yeah, maybe this Friday I can remember to call. If I call about it Friday morning.
Get that geek squad out to your house, get them to change it. At least with yours, the soundbar is it's not as bad. And if they'll come replace it, oh my God, I wish I had bought one from Magnolia just so I wouldn't have had to pack it up and ship it. It would have been... And then I ended up taking the unused pool noodles back to Target and getting my money back. And because what am I going to do? I don't have a pool. So... That's a lot more trouble than it was worth.
Wasn't that like $3 worth of noodles? How many of them things you buy?
You would think so, but they had some really spiffy ones. Now, I did buy a lot of standard pool noodles that were $2 a piece, but I saw these really nice ones that were like star-shaped, and I thought, wow, that would be really good angularly for the subwoofer to sit into this. Those were $8 a piece. I didn't realize that until I got to check them out. My wife's like, you're not cutting those up. You're starting with the cheap ones first. And so I especially had to bring all the expensive ones back. That was... My family CFO would not let me cut up the $8. I'm like, but I'm not having to pay for the box. I'm not having to pay for the shipping. Doesn't matter. Use the cheap ones first. She was right ultimately, but yeah, they make baller pool noodles, and I didn't even know that. So never get the star shaped. Apparently, they're made of pure gold. I think we may have the show title for that one. Anyway, so let's see. I wanted to lead off with I bought something from Colorware. I think I mentioned to you guys that I was going to do this, and I did do it. Where I got the vinyl skin for the back, and I am loving that thing. You know, I've never, in all the nearly 10 years of owning an iPhone, I've never gone caseless. And I've done that now, and boy, howdy, I did not realize how thin the iPhone was. Even the standard silicone case that you can get for the iPhone adds just enough heft where it kind of feels significant. Without that case, it feels really thin. I am loving it. And the vinyl gives it a little bit of grippiness to it. I mean, it had that before, but it really has it now. And I'm thinking about buying a couple of other colors and just cycling them out and changing those up. But when I posted that on Twitter and I tagged Colorware in it, they retweeted it. And I had a ton of folks that were tweeting me back, you know, of pictures of broken iPhones. Great, you're going to break the glass on the front and the back. It's like, I got AppleCare Plus, man. It's I'm going to live on the edge. I'm living dangerously. You can't stop me. I'm a rebel.
You can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him.
That's right. And Jason, we met up for lunch a couple of weeks ago to swap gear. I gave him his pie hole that I built, and then he got me my chargers and my cables. Jason, what did you think of it? It's not bad, right?
Yeah, I mean, I like it. It looks really good. Before I placed the order for my XS Max, you know, I had sent out on Telegram that, you know, I was going to go caseless this time. And there's just been too many, like, I've never had, you know, the full 4 foot or 6 foot drops, but I've had lots of knock it off the desk or it falls off the nightstand or whatever. So I had good luck with the red leather Apple case for the iPhone X. So I just went with the red leather for the XS Max. And I'm pleased with it. It does add a little bit of heft, but overall, I'm super pleased with it. Yours looked really good, though. Like, I could see some more creative type folks really dressing it up. Because I think you just went with the back, right? So you there are other options.
Yeah, I just went with the back. You can do the entire phone. You can do, like, the one that goes around the edge. And I just didn't want to have to go to the trouble of lining it up over the speaker holes and the lightning port and all that. Like, that's what I originally ordered. And then I backed it up and, you know, changed the order midstream and said, hey, just make it this. And I don't really regret that because sometimes I may want to put it in a case. So I could put it in a case. You would never know that I had a different colored back and it would be fine. So, and that also gives me, I feel less bad about changing it out every so often. Like, I'm thinking about buying an orange one and doing that one for a month or two and then flipping to a red one or something like that and just sort of, you know, keeping it different. And it went on amazingly easy. They don't include the one thing that I wish they did. I've had this. I'm going to pull this out of my drawer while we're recording. Years ago, I think when I bought a Zag or something like that, I had like this squeegee looking thing, which is like a credit card, but it's rubber and it bends and getting out little air bubbles is perfect with this thing, right? I mean, it's I use this back in the days when
Well, it's made for it, right?
Exactly. But I mean, normally you could use a credit card or something, but I like something that's made of rubber because it has sort of it's not going to scratch it. It's going to pull right past. And I don't know why they don't put those in the box, but I don't know. I got this years ago and I've held on to it. And it even says installation squeegee on it. Maybe that's the show title. But yeah, I really like it a lot. I'm thinking about getting some new ones just for that. But being caseless is, I don't know, it's a nice feeling. I should have done this a long time ago.
I really enjoyed it when I had those corner nipples or whatever I called them. It made me a little nervous, you know, but yeah, that was pretty cool. The only thing I didn't like about it with those is I tend to change a case every now and then. And with those stuck on the corners, you know, that was it. That was the case for the time being. And then, you know, if you ever wanted to change the case for any particular reason, you had to unstick them. And, you know, every time you do that, it just a little less sticky. So,
yeah, with this, I would have to buy a new one each time. But and so I won't be changing them like every month or something like that. But every couple months, I could see myself. I mean, if an Apple case costs $40, if you were to buy the Apple case, and each one of these, I think, is like 14, you know, you could do this a couple of two or three times. And if you keep it on there for 2 or 3 months at a pop, I mean, it's not bad. It's good enough, and you get something that looks completely different, and it's a conversation starter. It's definitely people like, wait a minute, how do you have a lime green phone or something?
Yeah, I keep the leather, Apple leather, on my phone most of the time, but like all last weekend down at ACL, I have a spec grip case that I had with my iPhone 10 that still fits this one. I used that one all weekend just because I knew I was going to be walking around and outside all weekend long, and it's just a little better for those cases, but it's a little bit bulkier than the leather. So
yeah, I'm definitely digging it. And it looks better when I'm wirelessly charging it too. Maybe it gets a little bit that much closer to the coils. Maybe it goes a little bit faster. I don't know.
7.4 watts instead of 7.3.
So let's see. So eSIM functionality is going to be coming in iOS 12.1, which is in beta 3 right now. Carrier support is required. I know we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I'm looking forward to this because I want to. I've been a Verizon customer since 2012. Kind of enjoying it, but I do want to see how the other carriers compare. So it would be nice to have a secondary SIM from, say, like T-Mobile or AT&T or something like that, just to see what the coverage is like and what the speeds are like. So I plan on playing with that to see how it compares to Verizon. But Jim may need one for a completely different reason. So tell us about your bad experience here lately, Jim, and how it's completely counter to what you've been told of how it's supposed to work.
When I got my new phone, I was unaware. Well, I'm not going to say unaware. I guess I forgot I had set these settings where my photos would automatically download in the background, even over cellular, and my music would automatically download even over cellular in both Apple Music and Spotify. So about a week into having the new phone, which just happened to be about a week into my current month with Verizon, I blew past this 22 gigabyte magical threshold, and I've been throttled for the whole month. In fact, my plan cycles tomorrow. So finally tomorrow, I should be back to normal. I have had all sorts of data issues this month. And I know this because I've been in places where phones normally work, and they just decide not to. Or I've been with my girlfriend, and I mean, even though she's on AT&T, and her phone works fine, and mine just, you know, when I start up Pokemon and it just takes forever for it just to load like what's on the screen, or when I, you know, open up Waze and it takes a minute and a half for it to finally go, oh, okay, you want to get directions someplace or things like that. So
It's been a pain in the butt is the nicest way to put it. But also, I'm just looking at my phone now because when we started this up, I wanted to check to make sure that tomorrow was still my cycle date. And yeah, so tomorrow's my cycle date, the 15th. My data usage for this month right now is 90.46 gigabytes.
So you still managed to put 12 gigs on it after you hit the 78 gigs that got you throttled. So
it could have been
that slow.
Well, but it's been, you know, it pretty much the whole month. And then a lot of last weekend in Austin, I switched the phone over to 3G. I turned LTE off because it basically wasn't functioning in those crowds there because I was in a really crowded area.
Congestion.
Yeah, congestion.
So there was a lot of congestion on the LTE there because there's a lot of people there. So I actually switched over to 3G and it worked. It wasn't fast, but it worked. Whereas otherwise on LTE, it wasn't really working at all. So
that's interesting. So Verizon has always said that they don't actually throttle. They say that when you're in a congested area, you may be deprioritized for other people while you're in that area. But they say
AT&T says the same thing.
Well, to me now, deprioritization means it doesn't work. It's not slow. It's just that it doesn't work. You just never get your packet sent. It doesn't
deprioritization
send the
means
slow.
You are dead last.
Yeah, you're dead last. And so other people keep jumping in front of line for me. It's like, go to the back of the line, and then the line just stays busy where you never actually get to the front of the line.
So the way they described it, it was like, let's say you're driving down a highway and you're on this tower and it's congested. You may have, you know, slower service, but then you hit the next tower. If it's not, then you're supposed to be back to normal again. So you're saying you never experienced anything but straight up throttle the whole
time? No, I would say it worked some of the time, just not great. But at times it was so painfully slow that it seemed like it wasn't working at all. That's what was weird to me.
Okay, that is weird. I think the most I've done in a month is probably close to 30 gigs, I think. But most of the time, I don't hit that. I try not to leave the house as much as possible.
So I'm out of LTE hell tomorrow, so that'll be nice.
LTE jail.
Yes, sir.
So do you guys ever see yourself trying out the eSIM functionality in the new iPhones and maybe changing out carriers?
Definitely.
I've been trying to think of a practical use for it for myself. You know, I don't travel like you two do. So
here's a perfect example. So my friend Rodney, who lives in Thailand that I went and saw earlier this year, he's always kept two separate phones, one that he used in Thailand, and then he travels to the States for work a lot while he's here, and he has a separate phone on a separate plan that he used while he was here for that purpose. And so he was very excited for the eSIM when it was announced because, at least, you know, in theory now, he can buy his phone in Thailand and have his plan there and then have an eSIM plan that only operates while he's in the U.S. and he can keep just one phone instead of having to switch back and forth or having to switch out a SIM card, which is what I did when I went to Thailand, was, you know, completely physically switch out the physical SIM for a different SIM while I was there, which, you know, I guess it's fine for a 2-week vacation, but if you're doing it more than a couple times a year, you know, I mean, SIM cards are kind of small and hard to keep up with, I would think. So,
yeah, traveling internationally is a big thing. And I know that most of the U.S. carriers have, you know, even Canadian and Mexican data plans, so you can roam in all of North America. But it's still not quite the same. And I think T-Mobile will let you have, I think it was free 3G in North America, and I think 2G in the rest of the world or something. But it would be nice to be able to do that. I know there's a place that my wife and I went about a year ago in the middle of nowhere, Texas, when I was, you know, I went to a excursion and nothing but AT&T worked there. They're like, nothing but AT&T works here. And I was like, oh, that can't be that bad. No, it was exactly that bad. Only my brother's phone with AT&T actually worked. So I know for me, I would definitely have, I'd pre-buy something so that I could do a brief AT&T plan while I was in the middle of nowhere, just for the data, if nothing else, because I could then make at least FaceTime audio and whatever else. I don't know how this is going to work. I don't know if it's going to be voice and data or just data or what, but I definitely have at least that use case for it.
So you can still use voice and data even if you don't have voice, because this is one of the things that I do. I travel to all sorts of shooting ranges all over the country, and they're typically out in the middle of nowhere with terrible coverage. So my personal cell phone is on Verizon, but I deliberately have an AT&T phone for my work phone. So if I go to one of these places where only AT&T works, which I found that it's more the opposite, right? Verizon works more places than AT&T doesn't. But there was one place in Alabama where, I mean, there was zero bars of service, like nothing, not even 1X on Verizon. But I had like 5 bars of LTE for AT&T. So I just tether my Verizon phone for the Wi-Fi hotspot and then turn on Wi-Fi calling. And so that allows me to actually receive incoming calls and make outgoing calls over Wi-Fi using the AT&T connection on my other iPhone.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I leave Wi-Fi calling turned on all my devices, I guess. So yeah, that's a pretty good thing. Still can't wait for that to get here. So let's see. Siri shortcuts. Have you guys actually made any Siri shortcuts, downloaded any Siri shortcuts? If you say no, I'm going to be very disappointed in all of you.
I'm very ashamed. I have not set up any. I feel terrible about it, too.
I have one, and it was the one that you shared in the group for splitting checks and sending out like requests to Apple Pay or Venmo, which is really awesome. Like, that is really awesome, especially if you're someone like me that travels with a, you know, business group and, you know, you do a lot of meetings or, you know, lunches and dinners like that. But yeah, that's the only one I have.
What? There's one that splits the check? Brian didn't tell me about that the day that he let me treat him to lunch.
Sorry, man. I don't have any cash on me.
He did. I mean, he got your pie hole too, you know.
No, I told him, you know, on my rules, right? If you come to visit me, I treat lunch. If I come to visit you, you treat lunch.
Oh, that is true, right? You live in like North Georgia, right?
Yeah, something like that.
It was a nice little drive that day. No, the Siri shortcuts, I'm going to put links in the show notes. I've been all about this. The subreddit, I highly encourage you guys to go and check it out. I was watching Rene Ritchie's Vector video on that, and I guess he linked to the YouTube channel for one of the guys that used to work on the workflow that Apple bought that became Siri shortcuts. So I've been trying to find neat little things. Something that I discovered this week in playing around is that you can have your the one for maps. Like, I assumed that the shortcuts for maps were just for Apple Maps, which who uses Apple Maps? No, actually, you can say, here's an address, pass it to Waze, open Waze with this address, and it will do it, which is super useful. So I can invoke Siri and say, hey, let's go home, and it'll start playing Overcast. It'll play a playlist that I specify. It'll open up Waze. I mean, it can do some neat things. There's a lot of limitations that I'm finding, too, but
that sounds like magic.
It is nice. Now, if only they would get Starbucks integration like they did with the Philz integration on the at WWDC, where I could say, all right, let's go to work. It goes ahead and pre-orders my drink on the way through. That would be super. I would enjoy that quite a bit. But yeah, I'm going to link to all of those, and it is very, very nice. It's I encourage you to sit and play with it. It's kind of like If This Then That, or one of those things where you know it's powerful, but you have to sit down and it feels like you're doing homework. But really sort of think about some of the use cases that you would like to see things happen with. And a lot of the things that you can't natively do, since Siri will pick those things up and show them for you. Like for me, I like to sometimes play Overcast on the HomePod. So you can say, you know, do this and it'll have it. Well, if you go into your Siri shortcuts, it'll be play so-and-so podcast on the HomePod. And you can add that as a shortcut so that you can just go ahead and start doing it without having to. Because I don't think right now there's a native way to make that so that it will play on a specified AirPlay device. But if you're doing it enough, somehow it gets into the Siri shortcuts where you can go and invoke it. So if you can't make it work, try doing it manually a few times and then go into your Siri suggestions inside of the Siri settings. And you'd be surprised what you'd be able to pull off. So there may be hope for doing something with Spotify, Jim, if you were gonna do that.
There's been a couple of times, yeah, I've gone to use Spotlight on my phone and it does suggest, hey, add this as a shortcut, and I just haven't ever taken that extra step.
Yeah, same thing here. It'll suggest things, and I don't know. I've been listening to a lot of more podcasts lately. I don't know. I ebb and flow with my podcast listening. Now I'm like in a heavy, like anytime I'm walking somewhere or doing something, I've got a couple of new ones playing. So
yeah, I've been trying to make time to do it. I've just been insanely busy lately. I have a lot of health issues I've been dealing with lately. And between that and work, I just haven't had the time or the inclination. I need to listen to the third season of Serial, and I just haven't even started that yet.
Oh, it's really good. It's really good.
It is good. Yeah.
Well, great. I guess I'm going to have to do that now. Usually I do that when I'm in the car or if I'm going on a long drive. I just haven't had a long drive where I've been by myself. So I get, maybe I'm having some surgery next month. So maybe while I'm recuperating, I'll sit there with my HomePod going.
Well, speaking of long drives with podcasts and music and Spotify and whatnot, I think we spoke on one of the recent previous episodes that I was getting a wireless CarPlay receiver put into my Navigator. So since that last episode, I have gotten that, and I've got to say, man, it is super, super convenient to just be able to go hop in the car. It instantly connects. The way that it connects is it's not using Bluetooth. It's actually using 5 gigahertz wireless. So you actually see in your Wi-Fi connections that your phone is connected to the name of the Wi-Fi network that the head unit is broadcasting. It is smoking fast. The interface for it is faster than my wired head unit. So I've really been enjoying that.
So you connect through wireless from your phone to the head unit, but then the head unit somehow uses the cellular connection on your phone to do things? Or
yeah, exactly.
So it's like it's tethering to your phone?
Yeah, so almost think of my phone as a Wi-Fi or cellular bridge for that device to get out on.
That's interesting. Seems like Bluetooth is used that way a whole lot more than Wi-Fi is.
Well, the amount of data that you have to pass back and forth between the phone and the display, I think Bluetooth probably just wouldn't cut it for CarPlay by itself. I think there would be some lag, and I don't know. It's it seems nice, though. When Jason and I were having lunch, we discussed this. It's different because the aftermarket units, you actually have to touch the touchscreen, where mine, where it's built in, I can't use a touchscreen. I have to use like a click wheel that's in the console, and I kind of prefer that just because I don't have to take my hand away from that far away from the wheel, and I'm not having to look. So if I do something with the wheel, I know exactly where it's going to wind up on the display. I guess after a while you get used to it, you just know how many clicks I need to go to get from here to there. So that's a difference. But hey, at least you have wireless and don't have to pay a subscription fee for it like in a BMW, so that's nice.
That's right.
Jason's just like, Jesus, take the wheel. I'm going to use CarPlay.
I guess that won't get you a ticket in Georgia because that's technically not touching your phone, so you're good.
But what will get me a ticket in Georgia is the fact that I put a micro bypass on the unit and can watch SportsCenter on the 8-inch display going down the road. Oh, I mean the off-road. Off-road use only.
That's the bomb.
It uses the 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi for, so that you get smooth video streaming.
Well, no, so that's actually being done over HDMI.
Ah, I forgot you mentioned HDMI in Telegram a couple of weeks ago.
So, what do you guys think about the new Apple Watch faces? Have you changed from the ones you were using on the Series 3? Tell me about it.
Yeah, I'm using the big old fat nasty 14 complications or however many. It is, what do they call it, like Infograph? Yeah. I don't like some of the limitations on Infograph. So I've got to say, man, kudos to Apple. This is the same, essentially, size form factor. But it seriously feels like an upgrade from like a 36-inch big screen to a 75-inch big screen. I mean, it is considerably easier to see. I mean, so much more info on the screen. Things I don't like on the Infograph that the heart rate, if you want to actually see what your recent beats per minute is, it can only go in one spot, which is like dead center, 12 o'clock area. But other than that, that's my only gripe with it. It is, I am very, very pleased and surprised with the engineering that went into this thing to, you know, keep it essentially the same form factor, same watch band stuff, and just the execution on this thing was perfect.
Wow.
And I've got to say, I am happy that I held out for the Nike edition, because the other night I was checking the mail and it gets dark early and we've got a street light that's near our mailbox. And I looked at my wrist and this black band was almost just like completely glowing white from the reflective of it. Like during the daytime, you almost can't even see any white on it at all. And at night, you know, when it was under direct light, all you could see was white.
There's a lot of white in it. When I looked at that band at the Apple store, I actually liked the previous black band better, but I also understand your use case here, and that's exactly what it's meant to do, so that's good. So as far as I'm concerned, on the hardware, like Jason just said, is amazing. The new size of the watch, it would never have to get any bigger than this. It's plenty big enough now. The screen is gorgeous. The new watch faces are, to me, just crap. I'm still using the old modular face because it's got the complications that I want in it. And with the Infograph, to me, the most important thing about my watch is telling the time. And you can't tell the time with that damn Infograph. The way the ticks are too short, the hands don't reach out. I mean, Marco posted a blog post recently about the new watch faces, and he made some really good points in that in the blog post about how, yeah, it looks great, but it's just from a utility point of view, it doesn't meet. They're more worried about how it looks than how you actually want to use the watch. And so to me, it's just not worth it. You know, I'm still using the modular.
I got to say, I'm still using my old watch face as well. I'm not, I haven't switched over though. I may do it this week. It just took me some time to figure out how I wanted to deal with some of these lack of complications. That's probably the worst thing when they launch the new faces is waiting for all of the apps that support complications to support the new watch faces. So, you know, we discussed in the last episode when you went to the Infograph modular, all of the things that were at least in the modular, you expected to still be there. They were not. And that's been sort of a sticking point with me. So I did spend yesterday trying to go through the dock and sort of rearrange things. So at least I have one button that I could tap to get to some of the things that I use most recently or most often without having to depend on the watch face itself. I did go for the stainless steel. I got I had the aluminum that I was wearing for a couple of weeks until the steel came in. I ordered them both at the same time, but of course the steel is always behind the aluminum in terms of availability. So, you know, I had the 44 aluminum for a while. I liked it. It's okay. I like the shiny jet black of the steel more than I like the matte black of the aluminum. I think the display sort of disappears into it a lot better. And that was the case with the Series 3 and earlier generations as well, too, is that I never realized how narrow that display was because it sort of melds into the background and it's sort of just like one obsidian thing on your wrist. And with the aluminum, it was a lot more pronounced, which was still fine, but I decided I wanted to take it back. And I didn't realize the Apple Store had a two-week policy. I thought it was a month policy. I thought it was 30 days. I think iPhones were 30 days at some point. So I went waltzing in there yesterday with my aluminum ready to return it. And they're like, oh, you're past the 2 weeks. I guess it had been close to three by the time I actually returned it. But they took it back with no problem. I wasn't going to walk out of there without them taking it back. It's like I went and got the more expensive model. I'm returning the cheaper model. You know what I mean? Like, it would be really stupid for them not to take it back.
So were you still inside your window for the steel? So you could have returned that one. You could have said, okay, I'll give you the more expensive one back. Would you rather that?
I was. I could have actually done that and said, you know what? You know, we have two choices here. You can take the more expensive one back or you can take the cheaper one back. It's up to you. But they've always done right by me. It was just sort of weird that they've done the little scan thing. They're like, wait a minute, you're past the window. And he's like, let me check. And they walks back and, you know, like within 2 minutes, yeah, okay, here you go. It's going back on the card.
Well, that's good to know for any listeners out there. You know, hey, it's 2 weeks now.
Didn't the phone have a 30-day window? Am I making that up? I could have
sworn. No, I remember we used to always say that on the podcast. You could probably find several references to that where, you know, I've got 30 days to do this or 30 days to do that.
Yeah, so earlier in the old days, like in the 3, 3GS, 4, 4S, 5, they had 30-day return policies. And then I think most of the carriers changed that and went to like a 14 or 15-day policy.
That is nuts. You can go buy a piece of electronics at Walmart or Target or Best Buy and still, I think, have 30 days in a lot of cases to return that stuff, right? Or am I just making that up?
No, I think Best Buy, for the most part, is 30 days across the board, and that's even extended further if you're one of their Elite or Elite Plus members.
Good deal. So when I had the aluminum out, I didn't unpack the band. I didn't take out the power cord or any of that stuff. I literally just removed the watch, and I was using my own bands, my pre-existing chargers. So they got it back in almost pristine. You know, the packaging was even pristine. So kudos to them for doing the right thing. But the steel is heavier. That's the one thing that I don't like, and to be expected. But I do like the look a little bit better, so I decided to go with that. Let's see what else is going on in the world. Facebook unveils the Portal, a video chat camera for people who still trust Facebook. So in the same week that it's announced that 30 million accounts were compromised, Facebook announces sort of like the Echo Show competitor of having a tablet with a camera in your house. Who would use this?
Who the hell asked for this, right? I mean, did they do any kind of a focus group or any kind of a survey to figure out? And so here was the one kind of really telling thing to me about this device was the very first day it was on sale, Best Buy had a pair of them already discounted $100.
Wow.
So, I mean, who releases something that has to be on sale the very first day? And I'm sure people will say, oh, that's to get you in, you know, free advertising. You know, you're going to tell your friends about it. And I mean, I guess technically you have to have these things in pairs, because I don't know if there's any compatibility with any outside, you know, like, I don't think the Facebook device can make a Skype call, right? It's probably a Facebook Messenger and a Messenger. So whoever you're going to talk to has to have one. But
yeah, but in the article, they talked about, you know, pretty much everybody you know is already going to be on Facebook Messenger. So, you know, you've already got all of your contacts ready to go. I mean, doesn't it pull up on their Messenger? If they, like, if they don't have the portal device, doesn't it just open it inside of Messenger on their phone?
Oh, yeah. I guess maybe you could make a Messenger to Messenger call. I am certainly not their target demographic for that device.
Messenger is hands down the most annoying messaging app that I've ever seen, because I like to keep a lot of my messaging apps with the notifications turned off, where I don't mind seeing badges or something like that, but I don't want to be dinged and binged, especially by the people that I talk to on Facebook, for God's sakes. Let's be real. I mean,
need no stinking badges.
Let me get the people that I went to high school with just reaching out and asking me computer questions throughout the course of the day. No thanks. So whenever you turn the notifications off and you go in to use the app, it pesters you the entire time you're in there. You really need to turn notifications on. Like, it is flat out obnoxious. It is the worst messenger. However,
it comes to the point that they basically tell you the app won't work if you don't turn on notifications. Yes.
Yeah, so like, if you don't have notifications, this is completely worth it. Why don't you uninstall it? That sounds like a great idea. Let me do that.
I am so happy to be off Facebook. I need like a coin, you know, like a
chip for the people that are in AA. Yeah.
A coin, like an AA coin. Like, I'm 6 months Facebook free, you know.
1 year Facebook free.
Wow. I am closing in
on 6 months, I think. I think I quit in like March or April.
I think as far as, you know, getting their audience, like I was talking about earlier, you know, being able to make like a portal device to someone's phone type messenger call. I mean, you do have an audience of, you know, 300 million people or something. Whereas, you know, when they were selling the Echo, when Amazon's selling the Echo Show, you know, somebody has to have one of those Echo devices. And then the other person has to have, at the very least, the Alexa app on their device, you know, and that's one of those things. It's like, hey, let's move over to this new chat platform or something. Like, let's make video calls, but you have to go download this app. And you know that most people already have the Messenger app downloaded, or a lot of people do. And I'm not saying the portal thing, you know, the portal device is some great device, but I do think that they were sort of ingenious in trying to sell, you know, this extra device and try to rake in more dollars that, you know, on top of now probably going to be trailing ad revenue because of their loss in numbers from their last two big data hacks.
Hey, does everybody remember when Amazon made that phone? That was a lot of market research there, wasn't it?
So the weird thing about this, if you think about the state of Messenger in general, right? I mean, you have Apple and Google, who are effectively the gatekeepers to those platforms, right? iMessage is a great messaging platform, and it keeps getting better. Google keeps every couple of years chucking messaging and trying to reinvent it. Duo, Lingo, whatever.
Google Plus.
Well, not just that, but I mean, like, their chat apps. I don't know a single person who's on Android who uses like the native messaging. They're all using third party messenger apps. And remember, there'd be like Hangouts, and now there's Duo, and now there's Allo, and it's like, who the hell even knows what the actual messaging app is supposed to be? It's like there's not a long term coherent strategy. They keep tinkering and playing with it. And then you have Amazon and you have Facebook, which, you know, Facebook has, between Instagram, WhatsApp, I mean, they have, no matter what you think of that company, they have a lot of the most popular applications on lock, right? But they don't have that hardware platform. And I really think that has to, you know, to Jim's point, when he mentioned the Facebook phone when it came out, they really are at kind of a disadvantage of not having a hardware platform. Their position in the world is tenuous. What people are using for software changes, right? You know, they know they are perpetually 6 months away from being the next MySpace, right? They could go, and that's why they buy everything that comes along that's even remotely cool, that's a competitor, and they desperately need a hardware platform. You look at Amazon. Amazon's still in sort of a bad spot too. You know, I know you don't think so. You know, hey, they have the Echo, it's everywhere, and they have the Dots and all those other things. The reason they're having to do that is because they've pretty much had to acknowledge that they're not doing anything on the phone. They're not going to be really doing anything significant on the tablet space.
I don't think Amazon cares. Amazon doesn't care.
Oh, I think they absolutely care. I think, I remember when they had that phone, that when Amazon made the phone, that was a really good phone. They had like the 3D cameras and all the other stuff. They absolutely. What is the number one used computing device by any person on any given day? It is your cell phone. Make no mistake. Jeff Bezos would sell his mother's soul to be able to have a platform that people are using. And
oh, I agree with you. But I also know that Amazon is such a part of people's lives in just the app on their phone or the app on their computer. I mean, it's just, you know, the website, it's just, it's everywhere already. And that's the Amazon, you know, they just want to be everywhere. They don't really care if they're on their own hardware or not. If they can sell you their hardware,
it's
they
the
can.
It's the Amazon way.
You know, but even the spots and the dots and the echoes and all that stuff, I mean, they've proven that people aren't actually ordering a lot of stuff off of those.
Well, what I'm saying is they've had to invent an entirely new category because what they wanted was the phone. That's why the phone came before the dots. And when the phone failed, they were like, okay, we have to invent an entirely new category.
Right. We got to pull the part out of the phone that we wanted to get into the phone and just make it into its own $40 device versus a $600 phone.
It's not that they don't care. They absolutely care. They were forced into another strategy because they had no alternative to do that. That's I think, where Facebook is right now. But what is Facebook's angle? At least with Amazon, they're selling you something overtly. Facebook's whole thing is connecting with people. But I don't know, with as many PR blunders as they've had from, you know, election type stuff and so-called bots or whatever, and now this platform compromise, they really need something. The wolves are really at the gate for Facebook, I think, right now. Whether it's regulators, whether it's people just being disinterested, not trusting them, they've got a real problem.
I love the headline that you put in the show notes. I don't know if you copied that from somewhere else or if you made that up yourself.
No, I copied it.
Because it's just, so the headline in the show notes that Brian does for us, thankfully, is Facebook unveils the portal, a video chat camera for people who still trust Facebook, which I just love that. It's like,
that is pretty funny. I mean, I have greatly cut down my Facebook use. I quit Facebook a couple weeks ago for probably 4 or 5 days. There's groups and people that I like to stay in touch with. And the only platform I have to do it is Facebook. That's just what those groups have chosen to use as their communication medium. But I have removed all of my content, like no photos, no leftover posts, anything. I did use it as a chat platform last night when my beloved Georgia Bulldogs were getting their butts kicked by LSU. I used it to vent some frustrations and talk with other like-minded individuals who were hating that game. But as soon as the game was over, right, I went back and deleted all those because that's just a conversation that doesn't need to be out on the internet for the next 50 years.
Yeah, with my family's reliance on it, I don't see myself getting rid of it anytime soon. But I do find it fascinating because it's a single purpose device. It is just a messenger device. Whereas at least with Amazon, you can consume content that you've purchased from their stores. You can buy new things. I just don't really get why does this thing exist? And other than the fact that Facebook really needs it to exist.
It exists because they're just a massive company and they can just start throwing things and try to make them stick. You know, they're fighting for, you know, every piece of little market share they can try to get their hands on. And, you know, they're probably paying, right at this point, they're paying more for it than it's probably worth what they're getting.
No, I totally get you. I don't see who would buy this thing. It would have to have some other utility besides being a Facebook machine, and that's all the utility it has. So I would buy an Echo Show before I would buy this, and I still wouldn't buy an Echo Show. Did you ever get your Echo Grandma clock, Jim?
No, I got the Show. I actually got a Show when they marked them way down a couple months back, and I actually really like the Show. The speaker in it is really good. I don't use the video screen hardly at all, but the speaker in it's really good, and for the price I got it, it was less than $100 when I bought it. It's a good alarm clock, you know, music playing device for the bedroom. So
you know, this bringing up the Echo Show also brings up a good point too of why it's important to control the platform, because I know that Amazon and Google have gotten into quite the row over YouTube, and I know that Amazon had to put in some sort of weird, funky workarounds for YouTube to work on the show, and I think Google's broken it intentionally a couple of times. Wow, that's one of the, since now Google, I guess, announced their own competitor to the Show in the last week or so, which I didn't put in the show notes because it so thoroughly didn't interest me, but I guess I should have. And one of the selling points is being able to use YouTube on it. So, you know, Apple and Google are in a really, really power position right now that have really put Amazon. I mean, it's smart what Amazon's doing of trying to put the Echo Everywhere to gain ubiquity outside the phone, which is smart. But man, that type of thing just, I actually feel bad for Amazon in situations like that where, hey, the most popular video platform on the internet, and you can't have it just because we don't want you to because you're a competitor. And then Amazon does the same thing where they kick like Chromecast and Apple TV out of the store for a while, even though Apple and Amazon made up. I don't think Google and Amazon have ever come to an agreement over that. I don't think you can buy the Chromecast anymore still in the Amazon store. Is that right? I think that's right.
I'm not even sure, but I do know that as much Apple gear as I buy, I still spend a lot more at Amazon than I do with Apple.
Same here. Well, I don't know. It's close.
Steel watch boy.
As I'm sitting here looking at my 27-inch iMac Pro, I think Apple may have gotten more of my money this year than Amazon.
I don't know, man. A lot of Pop-Tarts and Cokes and cables and other little doodads and stuff. That Amazon bottom line, it adds up quick for me if I look back and see how many orders I've got for just stupid stuff where, you know, you get that Primenesia where stuff shows up at your door and you don't even know what's in the box. You're just like, ooh, I got a gift and I ordered myself something and I don't even remember what it was. So
if Jim had a Costco subscription, Amazon, he would dry up on Amazon pretty quick.
Yeah, but then I'd have to get my car and go to Costco, which is God knows how far from my house.
And your car doesn't hold enough to bring anything back from Costco, does it?
Right. I could get like one box of something, like one box of crackers into my car and that'd be about it. 12 pack of Cokes and a box of saltines and my car is full.
So Jason and I were talking about this the other day too, with a lot of places like Target, Kroger, Publix, all of these places now doing the dedicated pickup areas. I noticed that I made a U-turn when I was in Chattanooga last week through a Walmart parking lot. I noticed Walmart has that now where you can pull up and people will run things out to your car and you don't even have to go in. I think that's long overdue. And I'm hoping that'll help them fight Amazon a little bit. I could, for people like me who absolutely loathe going into a store and shopping, that could be a godsend. I didn't realize Kroger was doing it. I don't think the ones near me are doing it yet, but I plan on trying to use that feature quite a bit so that I don't actually have to go inside. That would be amazing. I would love it. You guys see yourself doing any of that? Well, I don't know. City dweller, Mr. Loft Boy over here. I don't know.
You know, I can actually see myself doing some of that. Or, you know, they offer it. That the Walmart here by me, and then the Whole Foods, I think, is maybe going to start doing some of that. So we'll see. I did an Amazon delivery here recently where I wasn't going to be home, so I just picked I turned off the 2-day, and by doing that, you got like a $5 Whole Foods discount on a purchase. And so I went to Whole Foods yesterday to pick up a couple of things, and I was trying to pull that up on my phone as I was walking around, and I realized it's only for Whole Foods delivery, so I couldn't actually go into the store and buy something and use my $5. I actually have to get Whole Foods delivery to use the $5, which is kind of stupid. I mean, I wasn't buying much. I was buying, you know, like juice and ice cream and, you know, stupid stuff.
Grapefruit juice.
And I, you know, was going to get my $5 off. Yeah, grapefruit juice, of course. I was like, Amazon, I just want to use my $5, but I actually have to get you to deliver it to me. I'm willing to come get it.
Pretty clever forcing you into that to make you have to do it.
Yeah. And also, reading the fine print, it's you could only use one per order. So it's not like I could save up like 6 orders worth and get $30 off my Prime Now delivery.
Well, we've been using Kroger's Click List for a long time now. My wife absolutely loves it because she works 12-hour shifts, and so she's working 7A to 7P, and the last Click List pickup time of the day is between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. So she can go essentially on her lunch break at like 11 a.m., fill out all the groceries that we need, submits it, and it's ready for her to pick up at 7 o'clock. She pulls into a parking spot, picks up the phone, and says, I'm in Click List spot number 3, and last name is Young. And within 2 minutes, somebody brings out your groceries and loads them up for you.
Have y'all ever heard of the Amazon Treasure Truck? Do they have that in Atlanta?
They do.
So I subscribed to those alerts a couple of months back, and, you know, just on a whim. And so maybe once a week, maybe twice a week, I'll get a text message that, hey, this is the item on the truck today. You know, do you want to order any? And basically the way it works is they have like five or six spots around Dallas that rotate. They're not always the same. Where if you order something and then you say, okay, between 2 and 4, the truck's going to be at the Whole Foods on McKinney. And so you go pick up your order. So I had never seen anything I wanted until about 2-3 weeks ago. Up popped up on a Friday morning. I was home in Dallas, which also, you know, I've got to be home to be able to go get stuff off the truck. It was a portable cornhole set. And I totally don't need a portable cornhole set, but I wanted to pick up that portable cornhole set off the Amazon truck. And so I ordered it that morning. And I even had the pickup timed perfectly to where I could pick it up on the way up to my girlfriend's house that evening. The timing was perfect. And about 3 or 4 that afternoon, I get a message from them. And it was like, sorry, the truck had a problem. We've canceled your order. Thank you. I'm just like, damn it. The one time in months when I order something off the truck and they cancel my order and no cornhole for me.
It's sort of like the ice cream truck from when you were 6 or 8 years old, and the notification on your phone. The notification on your phone is like the bells that you hear on your street. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, and then it's like all of a sudden it gets to your street and like, oh, we're out of ice cream. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect analogy.
Oh, that's the worst. That is the worst. Do we want to talk about the super micro hacking of Apple and Amazon? Anything you guys want to say about that? It's been covered so many other places, so much better than what we could do at Justice. But
yeah, I think it's did it happen? Didn't it happen? Who knows?
I'm a firm believer that it didn't happen. And I'll tell you why. It can only be one of two things, right? It happened and it's so bad that it's a part of national security at this point, and everybody is sworn to secrecy to swear that it didn't happen, or Bloomberg just got it absolutely wrong as journalistic business could do.
Yeah, I don't know if there's really much we can add about it. I have a hard time. I mean, obviously, that's when you have all of your technology built in another country, that is always a risk that it could happen. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was true, but you'd have to think that none of these companies are dummies. And the denials were so very specific and so very pointed. Apple, who's usually pretty tight-lipped, was kind of like, F you, this did not happen. So very, very interesting. But
did you read the one article from the guy who's like a white hat hacker who talked about like every piece of the Bloomberg story was essentially out of a white paper that he wrote, that if he was going to try to, you know, hack somebody, how he would do it. I mean, it was like almost point by point by point. You know, they used his details to describe something that never happened.
Yeah, it did seem a little sketchy. You would have to think it's a big risk, but to have that pointed of a denial and very specific denial, and even the State Department coming back saying, we don't know what you guys are talking about. We've never seen this, which I don't know, with the current administration, if they had an opportunity to fling some shade at China, I think they would do it. I don't think they would pass up the opportunity to say something snarky, and they didn't do it. So I don't know. Let's see. So half of all devices now run iOS 12. It's been out for just about a month now, and already got a great adoption rate. Are you guys surprised or not?
This is pretty totally typical, not. Right? Pretty typical. I mean, it's typical, but that doesn't mean Apple doesn't need to like throw it back out into everybody's faces. I mean, because it's pretty amazing that we've gotten to that, it being pretty typical. But yeah, how many versions back on Android do we have to go to get like, you know, half the population is on at least this version, like maybe 3 or 4 versions
cupcake.
Back?
Android cupcake.
Well, you know, the big problem there too is that the device compatibility across the board is so, I don't think you can ever get it so that a single version is running on the majority of hardware, because there's such a disparate range of hardware that it's impossible.
And I'm not sure how far back it goes, but I do have a coworker that has an iPhone 6 Plus and he has 12 on his phone. So I do know that, you know, that, I mean, that's several generations back for phones. I mean, I don't know if you could run it on, say, a 5S, but.
Did I read, and I swear I saw in some articles where some people are saying that 12 actually sped up their older devices a little bit. Like, their older devices felt faster with 12 on it.
Even something like the iPad Mini 2, which I made my wife get an iPad Mini 4, which was already old and out of date, even when I made her get it. Because I thought, well, the 2 is not going to be supported anymore, and if it is, it's going to run like crap. But I still haven't sold the 12. I'm going to, but the 12 has a lot of life left in it I mean, the iPad Mini 2 has a lot of life left in it with iOS 12 on it. And the benchmarks they were showing now wasn't phenomenal, but it was faster than iOS 11. So, you know, instead of getting slower, it got faster.
Right. And, there's one debunking. What's it? The planned obsolescence that supposedly Apple does for us. I mean, to me, that's just batteries. I mean, that 100%, when they talk about planned obsolescence, it's just the battery getting worse.
It really is. And whenever you hear people talking that nonsense of they just want you to buy something every year, if that were the case, they would never support something more than a year old or 2 years old. They would never do it because sheer inertia, well, your computer's too old to run this, is a great way to get you to go out and buy something. So supporting something 3 or 4 generations back is the smarter thing to do. And with most of your Android carriers, the reason they don't do it is because they've already made all the money they're going to make off of you when you buy the device. They have no incentive to keep you on older hardware, whereas Apple does, because you're more locked into that ecosystem and you're going to continue to use it. It makes it stickier, I guess, is the word. So I've never understood this.
Well, this topic's totally a tangent along the lines of battery and performance. I did read a cool article this week that during the hurricane, Tesla remotely extended the life of the batteries for their users, so that way they could actually, I guess, drain the batteries further than what is normally allowed. And then it also had like a better power management system, so they may not have had as much torque or whatever, but they were able to actually get a longer range out of that. I thought that was kind of a pretty cool thing.
That is just cool. I didn't see that.
Yeah, I remember seeing that as well. That was pretty nice.
Suppose that is to help them get away from the storm in one trip without having to stop and recharge, and two, because there may not be charging infrastructure on their way to wherever they may be going. Possible?
Yeah, that's really cool that they could just remotely do that.
But of course, the devious person in me, you know, is thinking of the Kingsman SIM cards, right? And so they're going to get the whole world to buy Teslas and then remotely shut them down and charge you more money later. Just kidding.
Elon would never do that to us.
He'd go full-on supervillain.
Well, he could play a supervillain. That is true.
He absolutely could. I did like a friend of ours, a friend of the show, who recently got a Tesla, was posting on Instagram his pictures, and I think he got a license plate that was like THX Elon as one thing. So I took his picture and I put the picture of Elon smoking the blunt on Joe Rogan's podcast, like, and put it underneath his and sort of photoshopped it and sent it back. I think he appreciated that.
Speaking of Joe, if y'all haven't watched the new Netflix special, watched it last night. Holy cow, it was funny. I was crying.
Oh, so he's got a stand-up special that's on Netflix?
Yeah, it just came out on Netflix. It was hilarious.
Yeah, I'd heard good things about it. I've been meaning to check it out. You know, historically, I haven't really liked his stand-up. I love his podcast, but I haven't been a huge fan of his stand-up based on stuff I've heard in the past. But the reviews,
I agree. He was, you know, not necessarily the best stand-up. He was much better just of a talker, like on the podcast and stuff. But he really knocks this one out the park. You know, he fits it in real well with you know, current events and whatnot.
I'm definitely going to have to check that out. So I think that's all that I had. Wait, you know what? There is one more thing I wanted to get to. I can't believe I missed this. So Apple reportedly plans to give away its TV content. That is a report that sort of leaked out this week, that instead of having a subscription service, that Apple was going to make it available to anybody with an iOS or tvOS device. Apparently, Macs will get no love. It still bugs me that I have a 5K iMac and I can't watch my 4K movies from iTunes on my 5K iMac. It makes zero sense to me. But, you know, it's the way it is, I guess. Maybe that's the content people that are doing that. But what do you guys think of Apple giving away their TV shows?
I thought I read it a little bit differently, that you were going to be able to get the TV shows on iOS or tvOS, but that they were going to have like their own kind of content programming channel or whatever that was going to be offered through other carriers. So like, you know, maybe DirecTV Now has an Apple content channel or PlayStation View or something like that. Maybe I read that incorrectly.
I thought that the TV app was going to serve as an aggregator where they were going to have Apple's content in there as well, and sort of use that as a way to entice other people to, hey, get into this, you know, this thing with all of our content. But I think it's a pretty interesting thing. I think most of us are starting to see that we've hit subscription overload. We have this balkanization of, well, now I have Hulu and Amazon Prime, and I have Netflix, and I have HBO Go, and I have all these other things. Recently this week, I signed up for a free trial of the DC Universe app because I wanted to watch the new Titan show. And that's an $8 a month service. I don't think I'll keep it very long, but it's like, my God, I'm tired of all of these subscription services. We've recreated cable.
Nickel and diamond.
And it's completely balkanized. And so good on Apple, I guess. I mean, with as many hundreds of billions of dollars they have in the bank, they can spend, they could make a Game of Thrones like show and give it away. And that would be an enticing thing, especially for people who are tired of paying things. So I kind of like that. I hope they get away from just making everything PG. But
and see, I think that's the key right there. I am not paying for watered down content, right? You either need to jump your ass in the pool or get your toe out of the pool.
Nipples exist. People curse. You know, it, like, come on, Apple.
Well, look, I mean, I get where you're coming from, clearly, but I think the bigger requirement is that it has to be interesting and it has to be good. It doesn't have to have the titillation factor. Like, I don't like when I watch things. Like, if you notice now, like, the F word is no longer censored on AMC and something else and FX. So I noticed that every week, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia has to drop at least two or three F-bombs. And I've noticed that Better Call Saul and The Walking Dead do the same thing or something. And it doesn't really bother me, but I wasn't really missing it before. Do you get where I'm coming from? Like, I'm not...
Oh, I totally get where you're coming
from. Yeah, I get where you're coming from.
It's gratuitous.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from on, like, those shows. But, like, I certainly would not enjoy Game of Thrones nearly as much if it didn't have the gore that it has and the sex that it has and the violence that it has. That's kind of what makes that show so compelling is just, you know, you think, God, you know, did people really live like this 600 years ago or whatever?
I mean, The Sopranos. Think about, you know, The Sopranos without, you know, a bunch of guys cursing or even something. So this is Last Chance U. That's probably the one show that I watched that has more cuss words than any other show I watch. In the previous seasons where it was set in Mississippi and now where, you know, where it's in you know, Nebraska or Oklahoma, wherever, Kansas. You know, I mean, I know it's a true, you know, what do you call it?
Documentary,
but still, you know, it's like people curse. You know, I don't understand. You know, look, Seinfeld made it happen and it was good, and The Office made it good and it was, you know, but just still, I don't understand just blanket saying, okay, you know, we're gonna make everything PG.
But how good would a cable version of The Office have been? That would have been,
oh God, yeah.
I don't know that it would have been any better than what we got. Like, I mean, for me, if I watch it and I feel like something is missing, then I would see what you're saying. So to Jim's point, like The Sopranos, without, you know, profanity or whatever, would definitely seem out of place. Like, I couldn't watch like a TV version of Scarface or Goodfellas or something. Like, that would definitely be missing something.
It'd be like meeting a stranger in the Alps.
Exactly. I was about to say the same thing.
good reference there. But you know, something like The Office, I never thought, you know what would make this better? 10 F-bombs. You know what I mean? It has to be organic to the plot. So you can have something, you know, when I watch a show like Vikings, which would be the closest analog that I would have to Game of Thrones, they're not nearly on the same scale, but I don't feel like I'm missing something necessarily. I don't know. I see where you're coming from. I don't disagree with you. I wish they didn't have a blanket policy and they felt free to do whatever, but I don't feel like whenever I watch Better Call Saul or It's Always Sunny and they have to work the F-bomb in, it's kind of like we've gone 12 seasons of It's Always Sunny and they didn't need it. Now they have it. And it feels like, oh, I'm going to push that button repeatedly. You know, it just, I don't know, it feels gratuitous.
Well, so here's the parallel that I make, right, is I was a big Seinfeld fan when it was on. And I mean, I still occasionally watch a, you know, rerun or two. But then years later, he came. So Larry David was essentially the creator of the Seinfeld show, wrote a lot of the jokes. A lot of the character is based on him. And what's his HBO show called? I cannot
remember. Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Okay, so if you make a one-to-one parallel of Curb Your Enthusiasm to Seinfeld, I think Curb Your Enthusiasm is so much funnier because they're able to go so much deeper and so much, I mean, it's just...
It's funnier in a different way. So, I mean...
It is.
Yeah, he's absolutely the inspiration
it's
for George
Costanza. It's funnier because it makes you feel just so uncomfortable sometimes.
Yes, the cringe factor. But then again, if you ever watch the British version of The Office, it also is cringeworthy in a way that I can barely stand to watch it. It makes you squirm. It's so uncomfortable. So, I don't know. There's a lot of latitude in that area to do it. Like, I wouldn't want to see a watered-down version of Curb Your Enthusiasm, but I wouldn't need Seinfeld with it. Because, you know, Seinfeld is also a guy who doesn't use any profanity in his act. And it's never been any worse for it. Who's the other guy that doesn't ever use profanity?
Sinbad?
Hot Pockets, dude. Hot Pockets.
Oh, Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah, Gaffigan. Gaffigan is one of those guys where it's like, or Brian Regan. I mean, there are people out there that can work in that within those limitations, and it's just it's a skillful art where they're still able to. It's when you don't notice it is the thing. Like, because anybody that knows me, I have no problem with any of that stuff. That's fine. Go ahead and do it. But I don't know. I'm going to keep an open mind about their content. I'll watch it and see if I like it. But I don't
especially
necessarily...
if it's free and it didn't add onto that yeah. list of growing subscriptions, right?
Exactly. And with the talent they've attracted, the people that they have working on a lot of this stuff, you know, some of the execs from Sony that greenlit Breaking Bad are some of the same ones that are working for them, helping them develop content. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what it's going to be like. And I have to think that it's probably not going to last forever like that. But maybe the reason they're doing that as well is that nobody, you're not having to pay for it. You're not having to opt in for it. So maybe that was the rationale of having that philosophy. I don't know. It seems a little odd, and we know that Apple's notorious about that type of family-friendly, you know, to the extreme. Disney, when they launch their streaming service next year, is reportedly doing nothing that's R-rated, from what I've heard. Which, you know, that you go, okay, Disney, yeah, but they have Star Wars and Marvel movies. And
Marvel, yeah.
And they had Touchstone Pictures and Buena Vista Entertainment and all those studios that released R-rated content that were technically owned by Disney for like the last, I don't know, 30, 40 years, something like that, at least since the 80s. So, I don't know. I want to see them. I want the entire world to be open, but I'll be open to seeing what they do just to see if they can do it in an interesting way that doesn't feel like a limitation. Rant over. And I love Curb Your Enthusiasm and I love Seinfeld.
Yeah, whenever I say buy a TV show on iTunes, you know, I'll sort of binge it and I'll not necessarily delete it, but, you know, I'll hide it in the library because I'm, you know, I don't need to see it again, you know, show up on the TV screen. And I haven't hid Seinfeld yet. Like, it stays on there, you know, because I'll always go back and watch it.
Yeah, I like the fact that it's on Hulu, but I think I actually bought it in HD. When they remastered it for HD on iTunes, it was on sale the entire series for like $80 or something. I'm like, this is a must have. I'll even if I watch it once. Some of those things.
It was like back before the summer, I think. Yeah. They put it on sale for like $80.
And yeah. I bought The Office the same way. I bought Parks and Rec. There's a few things in HD that I want to own that'll be a permanent part of the library where I, you know, at some point Netflix will lose a lot of those things or Hulu will lose whatever. You know, I want to have those so I can watch it anytime. Well, fellas, I think that's really it for real this time. I can't believe I forgot to mention that, but,
I wanted to throw in, So I got a coupon last month from 12 South, and it was like, happy birthday, Jim. Here's a 20% off coupon for your whole order. I don't know, probably four different times I'd put stuff in my cart and I'd be like, you don't really need that. You're just doing it because it's 20% off. And I got to the end of the month and they sent me another email and they're like, hey, this coupon you got's about to expire. And damn it if they didn't get me. So I bought the Plug Bug Duo, which I really like. It's proven very useful on site, you know, plugging in the Mac. And then I just got two ports for charging USB devices because my Mac doesn't have USB ports on it.
I still can't believe you haven't owned one of those before. I bought one of those in like 2013.
This is the new big one that goes on the, that's got the two
that's
ports
so
on it.
That's so 5 years ago, Jim. My God.
I've got one that worked on the old one, but this is the double. This is the new double one. It's got a 2.3 and
the dually.
The dually. And I bought the pin thing where, you know, it just kind of glues onto your cover with the magnet, which I really like.
I still can't believe you didn't get the iPad Pro case that I got for like $8 a long time ago that has the pin.
I don't like
on
that jutting out
that
the side
thing. That thing is awesome.
I don't like that jutting out the side thing. And then I also went Book Arc for my MacBook Pro, which I really like.
Wow, Jim went on a shopping spree.
Different stuff that I had throughout the month. Like, I was like, do I want that? Do I want that? And then I finally was just like, you know what? I got 20% off. Let's just do this. And shout out to 12 South. If you would love to sponsor us, we would love to have you. We'd talk about you for free, but if you just want to give us some more 20% off coupons, that'd be great.
I was trying to bring my Book Arc into frame. I have one at home and one at work. I think I bought mine off eBay a while ago, but
I got the wooden one. So they have the metal ones now, but actually this wooden one matches my desk perfectly. So I've got like the light colored wood desk from IKEA. And so this wooden one matches great. So
you had to get the fancy Book Arc. Well, that should probably do it for this week. We'll try to get an episode out a little bit quicker. Shout out to all of our fans. Our download numbers keep growing, and we appreciate all of our listeners. And thank you guys for listening. We're going to keep it up.
Thank you all.
All right. That's the show, and later, fellas.
Later,
fellas. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.